Almighty One, our sacrifice begins. We commence.
To Spellbird, a podcast about the Dungeon Crawl Classics role-playing game. It's time to party like it's 1974.
Sometimes you come back from the con, and instead of pulling all the stops out to do that interesting and informative episode, probably on clerics, or the birthmarks of genies, or the ecology of the space wombat, or whatever, you just want to talk about the con and maybe sneak some relevant content in there, like in this case. Having just arrived back from Gen Con 2019, we have the opportunity not only to round up a great show, but also we have James Pozzanel on board to talk tournaments with us. I'm Judge Julian, and with me are Judge Jen.
Good morning.
And Judge Jeff.
Hello, everyone.
And all the way from Michigan, remotely piping his voice in through multiple god AIs, we have our long overdue guest, Judge James, I'm sorry, Pozzanel,
but hi. Pozzanel. Hey, what's up?
But it is Sunday morning, so before we dig in, let's head on over to the bar.
Welcome, friends. Good to see you.
I only had one drink to calm my nerves.
Innkeeper. A drink of your most expensive.
Tavern Talk.
All right, we will go ahead and kick off our show and our Tavern Talk with a little bit of Gen Con wrap-up, so I'm going to hand it over to Judge Jeff.
All right, so I spent a lot of my Gen Con this year doing the Dungeon Crawl Classics tournament, and since we're going to be talking a lot about tournament stuff in the meat of this episode, I'll go ahead and skip over the bulk of that. But I had a really fun Gen Con. This was my fourth Gen Con. And one thing I would like to do is I would like to say congratulations to Sean McCoy, Fiona, and Don for their win on Mothership and Dead Planet.
Yes.
Very well deserved. It's a great game, and I'm really glad that it got the recognition it did at Gen Con and at the Ennies. I ran a session of Queering the Dungeon on Sunday, which was very fun because it was a group of six friends who all signed up together. So they all knew each other.
Wow. That was lucky.
It was. And it's the Queering the Dungeon is evolving. I'm now planning on turning this into some kind of a zine. And the first issue will be the Dungeons and Drag Queens edition. And we were running the Dungeons and Drag Queens adventure for Queering the Dungeon. We did that the final day of Gen Con. And I'll be running two sessions of it at GaryCon as well, along with two sessions of Dead Planet from Mothership. That's what I'm planning on doing for GaryCon. Also on Sunday, the final day of Gen Con, there is the big awards ceremony. And I was not expecting to win any kind of a medal, and I did. I got a deadliest tournament judge. It's from the stats from the previous year, but that was exciting to come home with a gold medal.
Really? That was for last year's tournament?
Yeah.
Oh, neat. Okay.
And also, I would like to just give a quick shout out to my buddy Zach Lane. He is... just this killer DCC judge. He ran just as many games as Brendan LaSalle did this year, which is just insane. And on Saturday, he ran a game from 9 to 1, a game from 2 to 6, and a game from 7 to 11. So the dude he's a machine.
Wow.
But he's the one who's currently editing the Road Crew fanzine. So I let him know that I would go ahead and give a shout out to the Road Crew fanzine. They're currently looking for submissions. So if you have any art, homebrew rules, or if you're a judge who would like to be interviewed, or you would like your local game store to be featured in some way, then you can go ahead and email Zach Lane. His email address is judgezedd0512@gmail.com, and it'll also be in the show notes. But that was my Gen Con wrap up. I had an awesome time, a lot of fun, and I'm looking forward to GearCon.
Thank you, Jeff. How about you, Jen?
Well, let's see. I didn't realize how many hats I really wear at Gen Con until I started doing the math afterwards. And starting Tuesday, when we rolled in with literally over half a ton of Appendix N books, I put in just shy of 30 hours at the Goodman booth between Tuesday to Sunday. And that was including going and making the costume changes to do the performance thing, because that's the job that, you know, pays for the hotel. So priorities. But it was amazing to see all of the other new merchandise at the Goodman Games booth. I know Joseph did this walkthrough thing that a lot of people saw the video of. And undoubtedly, my favorite spot there was the Lankmar corner. I was just handing people the boxes. Oh, you already got the Kickstarter. Okay, but you don't have number 9. Here you go. And just kind of shipping them on through. It was a lot of fun to sit on the seminar panel, especially now that I had notice about it, as opposed to last year. You guys remember Brendan and Harley had been talking about the DCC College thing that they wanted to put together.
Yeah.
Basically helping other people begin judging DCC. And so many people are like, well, I don't know how to convert my group over or whatnot. So, this year's panel was myself, Brendan, and Haley Skatch, with Harley Stroh kind of being the adjudicator, if you will. And then in the next hour slot, I know, Julian, you sat in on there for the Dying Earth panel.
Yes. Or
for the information in the What's New with Goodman Games seminar.
Yes.
And Jeff, were you in there for the Saturday panel on Appendix N or no?
No, I've never been in on a Goodman Games panel.
Well, yeah, I guess we should fix that, huh?
No, we will continue to lord it over Jeff for a long time as a non-panelist,
it's
Jeff.
It's not that big of a deal. With the Annie Awards, I also wanted to congratulate. And I'm going to blank on names. I'm so sorry. It's morning. Swordfish Islands won for the best map with
Jacob
their
Hurst.
Improved map. Thank you.
Yes.
And I'm like, there's a face and I love him. And they also got one of the best layouts, I believe, for Silent Titans. So I picked that up from him and oh my God, it is definitely worth it. It's in the amazing category right up there with a little book that Judge James himself and Don put together, right?
Oh, yeah.
Only this one's in color, like big full color. Yeah. And, you know, there was the after hours gaming and the socializing that goes on concurrent to DougCon. And it was pretty amazing to see two gentlemen in that group on Saturday night because just that morning they had been at the booth. They had no idea what DCC was. But they loved the aesthetic of it. They loved the feel of the booth and how inviting everybody was. And we directed them over to customer service. Go buy some generic tickets and go down to room 127. See if you can get a pickup game. And apparently they had played 2 or 3 games that day. And then they were also at DougCon. So I was like, yes, more converts. That's always a good thing to see.
It was awesome. I did the same thing for a guy who was wandering around the room and couldn't find a game to buy into, but I sent him over to DougCon that night, and I saw him over there that night. I think it was Saturday night. So that's It's always super cool when you see people actually entering the cult. I mean, the fold. I mean, the group.
Yeah, I did actually get to run a small introduction to Lankmar for a couple of people because Dieter was like, come on, Jen, run me through something. And unfortunately, I was not in my best performance mode that night, but, you know, it didn't help that everyone kept coming over. Hey, can we interrupt you guys for something? 10 minutes later, there's the Dark Master himself. Hey, I'm going to interrupt your game. Yes, oh, Dark Master. But everyone was super patient with me. Thank you, Jeff.
It's fine.
And any game with Mark Plord is awesome. And our buddy Keenan was in there, which was great because I was able to send him up to the room to get the Lankmar stuff because I'm not bringing anything with me. You guys are going to buy it here, right? So what about you, O'Julian?
Well, for my con, I will say I had a great time. I dropped plenty of money at the Goodman booth, obviously, some money at the Lamentations booth, I believe, and surfed around the Pelgrane booth a little bit. I will say this. The exhibit hall just, I'm sorry to be negative, but man, it just gets worse and worse just in terms of the mass of people. The smell is sort of under control of the gamer herd, but it's just, and I walk fast, so maybe it's just me. Like,
it's not just you. No.
Okay, they maybe need to broaden the avenues or something, or make little skyway lanes so you could, if you were the 3% of Gen Con people that would go upstairs, you could actually just kind of walk above and then go down to your area or something. But, the exhibit hall is great, but it was so crowded that I only went in there like twice, both on Thursday, and I was like, yeah, I don't have to do that again. I'm just kind of...
I think some one-way lanes would be good.
But I still...
Try doing that with a couple kids, you know, in tow.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my... I can't even imagine.
I mean, you could widen the lanes, but that's not going to help.
And whenever I would see anybody in a wheelchair or somebody who is pushing a stroller, if you have wheels, it's even harder to have to navigate.
Oh, man. I was watching so many people bump into those in wheelchairs that when I was in full costume, I would just kind of spread my skirt out behind them and create a bit of a window for them so that people could traverse without hitting them.
Yeah.
You know that's going to cause them pain.
And by the way, I'm a grumpy old man, and I certainly bitch about kids as much as anybody, but the kids were not the problem. I think the teenagers were worse than the actual kids. Just saying. That's my editorializing. They stop on a dime. They do, you know. Anyway, okay. Enough
said. The 20-somethings glued to their phone, they were as bad as at Disney, man.
Okay.
Well, the problem really is, like, there are half of the people are trying to get from point A to point B, and the other half of the people are trying to look at every single booth.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like you have conflicting...
That's what we need. We need an express lane in the center of each aisle.
They need an express lane. That's exactly right. In fact, you could kind of go... What you probably ought to do if you're like me and you're really targeted, you should just go along the sides, you know, and because I know the map more or less. So anyway, so Gen Con, get off my exhibit lawn. That's the message I want you to take away from
me. I love it.
Okay, next, I won Dogstorm. I'm going to officially say that I won Dogstorm. And
is there a question mark there?
Well, yeah. So we played the first. So for those of you who don't know, Dogstorm is like a minis game that Doug Kovacs has created. I think there's all these bunches of landscapes out there, but I don't know that there's anybody who can really play it without the stuff Doug has. I'm sure Wayne has a set, and maybe Jared has a set. But anyway,
and it's very balanced and carefully playtested.
It's a perfect. It's like a perfect minis game. It's really fun.
Ow.
So we played our first tournament game a team game where we had teams of Dogstormers. We had 9 teams playing, 4 on one side, 4 on the other side. Not 9 players, 2 teams, good guys and bad guys, and 1 free agent team.
Were you a good guy or a bad guy?
I was a bad guy, of course.
Good.
And
I mean bad.
I'm not sure it was totally balanced the way we ended up on the board, but at any rate, my team won, bad guys won, and I had the most guys left. So most guys left in the winning team, I win. I win Dogstorm. I'm just going to put it out there because I've never won Dogstorm before. So anyway, probably the only time I ever will. I did run my Gesh of the Starcons game, which was a TPK, and I felt a little bad about that, especially since I had some younger kids in that game. The final
was it in the first 2 hours?
No, it was at the very end.
Pff, you're fine.
The funny thing being, actually, this is a dad and his 2 kids. They're both boys, and they were actually all 3 of them were really good DCC players. And the kid saved everything up. He was playing an elf, I think, and he saved it all up for the final spell burn. And he probably would have annihilated the big bad guy at the end. And he rolled a 1.
Oh,
it was so epic. And he got he was so happy to roll his corruptions and do all that. he didn't even really care. I think everybody else was kind of bummed out. It was kind of amusing because they were all trying to run away, and I was like, no, I think you're all going to die. But it was pretty epic because it went from like, okay, here's the I win button with the con spell burn, and then right to the, oh, we're all going to die. So it was pretty fun, as a con game should be. I also had somebody, this was sort of funny to me, I had somebody come up to me and go, hey, do you remember that game you did last year, XYZ, that we did? And I was kind of like, oh, man, that was kind of a brutal game where I was in a weird mood and I didn't think it really worked. And I almost, and basically you guys TPK'd in the second hour and it was just kind of a mess. And he's like, oh, that was such a fun game. We've been talking about that game ever since. And I'm like, oh, really? Hey. That's not what I thought you were going to say exactly. But, you know, it actually made me feel good. For all you people who run a lot of con games like me or even a few con games, it was sort of nice to hear that even though it seemed like kind of a mess to me, that these guys had a good time, at least some of them did. And it made me think, you know, we're probably our toughest critics, so it's something to kind of keep perspective on, to say, you know, even when sometimes you're thinking, oh, it didn't go the greatest, you know, other guys are having fun, and they're just happy to be there playing DCC with their friends, and, you know, you probably don't need to be so rough on yourself. I will say that, of course, the flip side of it is, of course, the game you thought was awesomely sweet has probably sucked, but, you know, but we can't always judge, so, you know, there's something there. My buddy Matt Tall, Mississippi Matt, who's run dozens and dozens of DCC and MCC here, almost had to bail from the con at the last minute where he was running tons of games because his mother-in-law passed away right before the con. But he ended up being able to make it, and her funeral stuff got pushed off at the last minute in a way that let his schedule come through. He won an award on the last day for making it, and his perseverance and dedication and not having to find somebody to run all those games, obviously. So I thought it was cool that he was recognized for that perseverance. So that was pretty cool. The last thing I'll mention, just this is general Tavern Talk, not Gen Con related, but somebody, as I've mentioned, my old pal, Judge John Dahlstrom, here a few times, and John told me literally at the bar a few weeks ago that he was at Clearwater Con in Eau Claire, Wisconsin recently, and somebody came up to him and said, "Are you John Dahlstrom?" Because he was running games there, and he said, "Yes, I am." And he said, "Do you mean like Julian Burnick's John Dahlstrom from Spellburn?"
That's hilarious.
So so it's official. If you ever, please, I don't think I've ever made a request to Spellburn listeners like this one. Please, 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 if you ever run into John Dahlstrom, please say, like, aren't you Julian Burnick's John Dahlstrom from Spellburn? Please. That's all I'm going to ask. That'll be my only request. Okay, anyway, so make sure to mess with Big John. James, how about you? We've been totally hogging the mic. Tell us about your Gen Con.
Well, Gen Con, this is my second Gen Con, two in a row. Both times have been with my kids, which kind of puts it all in a totally different perspective and totally boring because I don't really get to go out late at night and act the fool. And also,
how old are your kids?
I got a 13-year-old girl and 11-year-old boy.
All right.
So, but this year I ran 12 hours of the House of the Red Doors as a tournament. And that was, you know.
Wowza.
Yeah. It was, you know, each Thursday, Friday, Saturday, 4 hours. I was probably one of the recipients of a lot of those generic tickets that you guys sent through. Because I had a lot of new people who had never played the game, and they got to play something really kind of weird and, you know, conceptual, I guess, and not like a straight up dungeon crawl. So, but I think everyone who sat down at the table really enjoyed it, and I think that was probably the most important part. But yeah, a lot of the stuff you guys have hit on, like, you know, just getting around the exhibit hall was a pain, and I got two kids who are, you know, relatively well behaved, but you got to still, you know, watch them and get them from point A to point B. And I think all those giveaways too, man, that's it just turns into a nightmare. Somebody's giving away something at their booth and it's just a sea of people and a line and all sorts of other stuff. So, and the kids like to do that stuff, right? They'll totally sit through that torture,
yeah, you know,
to get the free thing. Yeah. And, you know, it was fun. So this is my second one. And, you know, I ran just one thing last year and quadrupled downed this time, and also decided to run a tournament and make a trophy and all this other stuff. So it was a lot of fun.
Are you you coming back next year?
Yeah, for sure.
Awesome.
And is this the only con that you do?
No, I do the local, which is UConn in Ypsilanti. Nice.
Yeah.
I haven't been, but I've heard great things.
It's a lot of fun. We got a pretty good OSR track. Ryan Thompson kind of runs that. And this year, I think we're going to have Mario there running Star Wound. So that'll be awesome. I hope to sit in that one.
Cool.
I'll probably run... I ran the Black Heart of Thakulon the Undying earlier this year, and I'll run it again at UConn.
Oh, excellent.
So just to some out of like current content. I'm writing something, but it's still in the proto stages.
Excellent. All right, and then we do have one more thing that I wanted to bring in here. Now, we try to be timely and give previews or heads-ups on stuff, and honestly, as many of you may have noticed who have sent stuff to us, the timing doesn't always work given our weird off-again, on-again schedule and stuff, but this time it actually works pretty well, so I'm happy that we can do this. So a guy named Corey Welch is doing an event at Gamehole Con, which is going to be the first weekend of November. I think it starts on Halloween and goes through that following weekend, and so they're doing a good cause type of charity event here. I'm just going to read a little bit from the event description, but we will link that in the show notes, of course, as well. So here's Corey's event description. So on December 28th, 2018, the gaming community endured a major loss of a gaming brother, Jerry Stefak, when he was lost to cancer. Jerry was an avid gamer, history buff, reenactor, and loving father. His love of his hobbies, family, and friends was always evident in his words and actions. We'd like to do some good works in Jerry's name and raise money for cancer research and patient assistance. Enter the Crawl for the Cure. We will be running David Beatty's incredible funnel, The Carnival of the Damned, as a tournament to raise money for a cancer charity to be determined by Jerry's family. And there will be 8 seats at the table to be filled with players with random 0 levels from the Purple Sorcerer Games Party Generator. Characters will be provided, of course. There will be a lot of fodder on hand for you to navigate your peons through the dread carnival. For your donation of $4, you receive your collectible pass to join in the fun throughout the day whenever your schedule allows. When another 0 level character dies in the encounter, and there should be a steady flow of bodies into the beyond, a new player takes the seat to test his or her luck against the horrors of the damned. So the event description goes on a little more, but I think that you get the general gist. It'll be kind of that old school 0 level tournament format. You can pop in and pop out. And
just to interject, this is going to be at Gamehole Con.
Yes.
And when you look at the event description online, if you already have games scheduled for that day, it's not going to let you buy that ticket. It's a $0 ticket. I don't know that very many of them have actually sold, because the idea is you can drop in at any time during the day. He's also mentioned in that description that if you're in line for a character and you want to get a seat sooner, you can bribe somebody for the next spot. So you can throw in more money towards this charity. I kind of like that almost gambling aspect of it. No, man, I'm going to double down. I want my seat sooner. Yes. Here's an extra $10.
Yes. That's a super cool element of this. And there's some interesting kind of experimental stuff. I mean, that really, of course, really fits for the charity game. So I'm curious to how it goes. And Corey, let us know. Send us a little wrap-up and tell us how it goes, because I hope, obviously, it's a raging success. And, you know, let us know what you learn. We'll obviously link the event in the show notes. All right. If that's not enough Gen Con and other talk, I don't know what is. So at this point, I'd say let's go talk about emails.
I call upon the flame to summon you.
I will deliver the message for me.
I came here to give you these facts.
Summon email.
All right. Over here in the email bag, I see a really big one on top, so I'm going to let Jeff pick it. But before we do, we've gotten some interesting feedback. I think it's kind of anecdotal about the egg timer, the timed response thing. We got a few people who were giving us shout-outs or questions or whatever saying, oh, the egg timer is so annoying. It just pisses me off. Oh, my God. And I don't know. It seemed like they were pretty dramatic responses or dramatic opinions. So I'm going to put out a call to people to tell us if they think that the timer is a good idea or a bad idea. We really just put it in there to make sure that we didn't really talk on and on and on and on and on about an email topic and totally blow away the subject of our show. When you have three or four people responding, that can easily happen. So let us know, because if you don't have it, then the show is going to be 20 minutes longer probably. So if, you know, do you want 20 minutes longer shows? Is that what you're trying to tell us? Or
Jeff doesn't.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, anyway, we're interested in your feedback, so send us some feedback. I think that's clear. So, Judge Jeff, why don't you reach in and grab the first email?
All right. Yeah, this is a hefty one. This is from Judge Jeffers. Hey, band. I got into role-playing games back in high school, just kind of dipped my toe in it, really. Played some 4th edition and Pathfinder, though those never really caught my eye. Loved the idea, but hated how bogged down it was, 50-50 time playing versus time with our noses in the books. So I started to try my hand at game design. On my journey through the world of podcasts, I stumbled into Jen's interview on Gaming in VS. Jen has read this before, if it all sounds familiar. I picked her brain a little about something recently. So that dropped in my lap DCC RPG, the system that had it all. I'm making my fourth round through your podcast and finally have some questions for you. I work alone, 12-hour continental shift. TLDR, big fan, got some things to ask. So Jeffers has a list of questions here. I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to direct each question to one person. So James, this first one will be for you. James, I recently went to my first convention and ran DCC. Based on my own experience, I came up with a list of things that I need to bring and things that just weigh down my bag. What do you bring to a con game, and how do you organize it when running multiple games each day? And James, you're being timed.
Oh, geez. first, shout out to Jeffers. I know him. I just played with him at Ragnarok Con in London. No, Guelph. I don't know. Somewhere in Ontario. Anyway, being timed. I don't take a lot. I usually have maybe like a printout of the module. That way I can make notes on it. It's not my copy. I bring that little reference book that I've seen many people have. It has like the crit tables and that stuff in it. And that's like definitely there. A little dice, a rolling mat thing, my dice. And usually spell kind of stuff, like it's grimoires printed up from Purple Sorcerer. I usually don't carry my book.
Wow.
Perfect. All right, so Julian, we'll direct this next one at you. What sort of info do you hand out to people who have never heard of DCC?
I personally don't hand out any. Of course, they can keep their character sheets and spell lists and stuff if their characters had spells, because they do usually do pre-gen grimoire type stuff. So pre-gens and grimoires from Purple Sorcerer character generator. But, I hand people my business card. I did hand out some Spellburn luck tokens this time around at Gen Con. But I encourage people to keep in touch. Drop me an email if you have a DCC question or you want to find Spellburn or you want to ask me a question or whatever. I just ask people to keep in touch. We're sort of a bunch of an extended group of friends, and I've gotten follow-up emails and just general questions or references and stuff like that. So I don't know. I wish I had a cooler answer than that, but that seems to work out okay.
Perfect. And Jen, this next one will be for you. For my first day, I had all busts. Not a soul showed up for the games. Luckily for me, Mr. Bishop was there too, so I got to sit in on his two games with his daughter and her significant other. What is the best way to advertise your game before a con so people show up?
You know, I have had no shows as well, but it's usually more on the local level, like at the friendly local gaming store or affiliate stores. For conventions, you know, I was not a quiet person to begin with in this community. So if I mentioned on G Plus that I was going to be there, there'd be at least one person signed up. I guess the moral of the story is be more active on your social medias. Twitter, I guess, MeWe at this point. Facebook is always good. Meetup.com. If there's anything in that area for role-playing games, advertise the convention itself.
Sounds good. I'll take this next one. So in Ontario, Canada, we have a bit of a problem. All of 100, a very generous number, people know about DCC. What have you guys done to cultivate new players? I tend to advertise the games in like on meetup.com. I find that that's a really great way to find new players. In New York, I started a Dungeon Crawl Classics meetup group, and that ended up becoming very successful and very popular right away. Here in Cleveland, I have run Dungeon Crawl Classics games for the Cleveland Tabletop meetup group. So, if you find a group of people who are already playing role-playing games and advertise to those folks, there are often going to be people in those circles who've heard of Dungeon Crawl Classics and are curious and want to check it out. James, this next question will be for you. So I'll admit it, I get super nervous without a little liquid courage running for people I don't know. So I was fumbling through my first game when people, my first game that people showed up for. How do you prepare yourself to run for the general public? Do you know any tricks for making sure that you give them the right vibe and make them want to jump right in?
This gets to kind of the root of being a judge, right? It's performance. You really have to put yourself out there as much as you feel comfortable, right? I think a lot of people will forgive you for being nervous. I think it's just, you just have to kind of walk in, own the role that you're doing, right? You're playing all these personas. I don't usually do voices. I know other people do. It's like you said, it's a confidence issue, and you just have to kind of, I don't know, push it down. I don't have a terrific answer for this, because it's just like, I get nervous too, and you just kind of like start rolling through it as hard as you can, and you stop thinking about, you know, what you feel, and you start just trying to think about what you're trying to present.
Yeah.
Ooh, I like that.
Well said.
I like that a lot.
Running games is running games. I'm sorry to jump in, but just, I would say, just keep in mind that they're probably less familiar with DCC than, you know, your home table might be. But other than that, running games is just running games. Try to make it fun.
And Julian, what modules from Goodman Games do you run at cons that give the most DCC feel?
Well, I generally have been running a lot of my own stuff, which, of course, has the perfect DCC feel, since I have been a super fan since the beginning. However, I recently ran a poll on MeWe, which, by the way, here's a plug for MeWe. Some people migrated from G+ to MeWe, and like me and four other people, including Stephen Newton and Jeff and a few others. I think Jen's on there sometimes. So anyway, we have a little corner of the internet doing DCC stuff on MeWe if you want to check it out, whatever. So I ran a little poll asking people what I should run if I was going to run an existing Goodman module next year, and Hole in the Sky won of my five choices or whatever that I gave. So I think Hole in the Sky might be a good one. I've never run it. I have played it. I think it's a really good old school, weird, pulpy sort of fantasy adventure. The only other one I'd say is, you know, I had some college buddies get together back in July, and they'd never played DCC, but they're curious about it because they know that I'm crazy into DCC. And so I was trying to figure out what I would do for them, and so I just ran Sailors for them. I had 9 people. I did it kind of tournament style, with each having a 0 level at a time, and it was awesome. I mean, that's still just a great adventure. I think for, I'm not sure I can pull apart the design of it, why it's so perfect at an intro level, but it's a really good intro to DCC. So, and it has a, you know, I think this sort of, I think it's the feel of Sailors became the feel of DCC in a lot of ways, right? So that's my vote.
All right, Jen. So he says, Jeffers says, I've always been a fan of small GM screens. I made my own that's all of 4 inches tall and is 8.5 by 11 that folds out to make a mat / roll tray. Though sometimes I feel like I have everything on it but what I need. So I've started working on a new GM mat to replace my screen altogether. Excuse me. What charts, tables, or info do you need? Do you want to have on your screens?
It's really funny this question comes to me because that very first official judge screen that came out was the product of me polling people on both major social medias at the time and getting the list of things that they're after, plus incorporating what I need. And so what you have on your current judge screen from Goodman is the amalgam of both of those surveys. I find the attack modifier table to be the one that I need the most because everything else, as you start judging this over and over, you get the gist of what the weapons are going to be, what the armor is. So that attack modifiers chart is important, and all the other stuff like the crit tables and whatnot can be found in that reference booklet by Jeremy Duram that's the one James was referring to.
Yep, and we'll link, that's on Lulu only, I believe, but we'll link that in the show notes.
Hell of a buy for $8, man.
Oh, yeah, and it's got a beautiful Kovacs cover, too.
Exactly. Dibs on question number 8.
Okay, so we'll also address number 8 to Jen. Jen, does the band have plans for more Linkmar episodes anytime soon?
Yes, next.
Woohoo! All right, Jeffers, thank you for your email. Jen, would you like to reach in and grab the next one?
This one comes to us from Clayton. I think this is Mr. Williams, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
Greetings, Spellburners. It was great seeing and playing with most of you at GaryCon. I'm already looking forward to next year. As you may be aware, I'm helping out with the Gong Farmer's Almanac this year. I would like to Spellburn to ask for your assistance in the next podcast to help raise awareness that it exists and that we are accepting submissions and contributor signups.
For 2020.
Yes.
Well, for the record, since they had 14 issues this year, I don't think they had any shortage of submissions.
Indeed.
So I don't feel like we did the Gong Farmer's Almanac a disservice.
He was like, I need more content. And I was like, are you serious? And I sent him a bunch of stuff.
Right?
And I was like, and then it's 14 and I'm like, what?
Episodes, yes, exactly. It's episodes. For those of you not aware, the Gong Farmer's Almanac is an RPG zine that's distributed for free on a first-come, first-served basis at Gen Con, and then later distributed as a free PDF online and at an at-cost print-on-demand version. All content relates to Goodman Games-related products and publications. So I know there's DCC, MCC, there's some Dark Trails in there, which is more third-party stuff, but still primarily the Crawl Classics family, right?
And each year they're also collected into one large volume. It's a paperback mm-hmm. volume that you can also purchase through Lulu, and those are very cool, and I highly recommend picking up each year's Gong Farmer's Almanac collection.
I have a feeling this year will be two of those, though.
Yeah.
Oh.
The binding won't support all of that.
I don't think you can get 14 volumes in one necessarily, but definitely there will be one, and it's always a hoot. So binge watch the Gong Farmer's Almanac.
Yes.
All 14 episodes.
And for next year, the zine exists only through the amazing efforts of volunteers. And as an editorial note, I will say that includes specifically Clayton Williams, Shiloh Weidman, and, of course, John Hirschberger. Mm. They're currently accepting signups for Gong Farmers contributors. I think they might want some more volunteers too. So if you have it in mind to be a writer, artist, cartographer, editor, or layout editor, maybe start getting together now, sooner rather than later.
Yeah.
There is a website for it. It's gongfarmersalmanac.com. And they can also be found on the Goodman Games forums, or they have a MeWe group for it. Ta-da!
Very good. Very good. Yeah, sorry that that was not timed perfectly, but we'll do another little reminder when we get down the road towards 2020
GFA. We'll get there. Do we have any others? Any other emails?
Yes, one last one from Judge Sam. Hail, lady and gentlemen from the City of Wind. First, I want to say how much your podcast enriches my DCC RPG game. When I got the treasure box last summer with special core book and 9 or 10 adventures, I was hooked instantly. Also, I feel like I have a pretty good grasp of the game. Good grasp, I guess. And I'm currently exploring the option of joining the ranks of the road crew. But I am vexed by one thing. I can't seem to wrap my head around the birth augur number 30 on page 19, that of the wild child. I will be eternally grateful for any enlightenment you can bring me, which is wild child is speed plus 1 or minus 1 equals plus 5 foot or minus 5 foot of speed. Sincerely, Judge Sam. Also, I will sweeten the deal. This is, by the way, the whole reason I wanted to read this. Also, I will sweeten the deal by saying I make a seriously mean pot of chili with meat, and if any of you make your way to Chicago, let me know. I will feed you good vibes. Ooh. And I hope your day is fantastic. I love chili. I love chili. So
chili's good.
Plans. Yeah. I don't know when I'm going to be in Chicago, but Judge Sam, I will take you up on that. And Judge Doug is in Chicago. He's probably looking for chili on any given day. So, you know, if you can track him down, bring him some chili. He can have my chili. So, Wild Child, speed plus 1 or minus 1. So I believe that your luck, it's tied to your luck bonus. So if you have a luck bonus of plus 1, you would have an extra 5 foot of movement. If you have a luck bonus of minus 2, you'd have a minus 5 feet per minus 1, so a cumulative minus 10 feet of speed. So your speed in that case would be 20 if you're a human, or 15 if you're a halfling, or 10 if you're a halfling. But anyway, that's
the idea. Base speed is 30 for most of the characters. So you're starting off with your 30 feet, and you're subtracting or adding 5 feet per
point of modifier.
Exactly.
Right.
That's how that works.
So
pity the halfling with 3 luck.
Oof.
Someone's carrying you.
Yes. Yes, it may not be exquisitely balanced for some very strange edge cases, but so be it. Thanks, Judge Sam. And we will now go on over to our mighty deeds.
Let the combat begin! To the death!
Why, behold, our hero.
So you want to play rough, eh? Well, take this!
Mighty Deeds.
All right, here we are over in the Mighty Deeds section. We're going to talk about tournaments, since there was a lot of cool tournament stuff at Gen Con this year, and it's always been a DCC feature of our landscape. First of all, we've got James Posnell on the show, and before we dive into all the tournament stuff, I thought we would just have James give us some background on his involvement in DCC. So do you want to talk about how you got into the game and what kind of cool stuff you've done in the DCC world, James?
Yeah, sure. I had started playing at work a 3.5 game, D&D, and just got increasingly frustrated with the amount of planning that goes into it, the amount of, like, you know, fiddling with all these kind of tools and edges in order to, like, create an encounter, only to see it kind of blown up in, like, you know, span of an hour. And I think at one point we were counting movement, every 5 feet and attacks of opportunity. Ugh. And all this other crap, you know. And I said, that's it. I'm no longer playing this game. I'm no longer running this game, and we're going to play something else. And I'd been kind of looking around for a system that I really liked, and I was looking at Adventure Conqueror King and DCC around the same time. And it just, the more I looked at DCC, the more it just felt like the right place. You know, there was like, the patrons was such a cool element, and it was so cool. I then wrote 13 of them and put them in a book.
entitled?
Yeah, Angels, Demons, and Beings Between, Volume 2, Elfland Edition.
Very nice.
Yeah. So,
I mean, if you're going to pimp yourself out, do it fully.
Yeah. Well, it's leading up to it, I think. But yeah, it's like, you know, you're writing one and then you're writing 13 and then you're just like, well, I got to put it all together. And so I begged David Fisher to let me ride on his marketing coattails and put it all through him. And we had a lot of fun. We put that out as a Kickstarter. And that Kickstarter also made me write a funnel for the Kickstarter, which was Fey Hard, which David really wanted to do a Die Hard send-up. And so turning that into like a fairy subject was like, you know, and I had to turn it around really fast because at the end of a Kickstarter, you hadn't really been writing it at all until the goal kind of hit. And so we put it together pretty quick and we got it out there. And so that's my first two big works. And that was, 2 years ago or so? And now a bunch of stuff in the Gong Farmers and in Sanctum Sacrorum. And now,
yay!
Yep.
Thank you.
Yep. I always like putting my stuff over to you guys. It was a thrill to see it all kind of compacted in your big compilation issue of monsters and stuff. And then I begged Don to finish his cleric tables thing, and he let me help him out with that. So I did a bunch of work in there to get it ready, and that's been gratifying too to see that go out. So now I'm working on the next things, right?
So,
such as?
Well, the House of the Red Doors, that's going to get kickstarted here within a month or so. I don't know. I got to talk to Don about the finalities of it all. But it's been run for the better part of a year. I debuted it at UConn.
We'll talk about that in a second. But first of all, what other podcasts have you done, James?
I've been on a couple. I've been on Hobbs and Friends.
Boo! Okay, anyway, that's... thank you. I just wanted to ask that question really briefly.
And then I've been on Don's DSR, too. The last DSR episode ever, maybe.
For those who aren't hip and in the know, DSR stands for Drink Spin Run.
James, you ruined Drink Spin Run. Is that it?
I did. Yep. I was the one. Wow. It's my fault.
Okay.
The nail in the coffin.
Oh, well. Okay. All right, well...
Deposit nail in the coffin.
Ooh. Ooh. Ooh.
Wow, that's pretty good.
I don't
good,
think my last name has ever been subject of a pun. Congratulations.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good. All right, so let's talk tournaments. Red Door is going to be part of this discussion. I know that there's at least 4 tournaments that we've had in the DCC world, and I'm sure Jen is going to kind of say it's 4.5 or 5 or something. I'm probably leaving something out, but there's the zero level tournament, right? Like I ran Death by Nexus like 3 or 4 years ago at Gen Con where right? So that was really popular back in the day. You would get a zero level funnel type character. You would sit down at the table. You would die in 5 to 20 minutes. Sometimes you'd get a good run going and survive, and you'd win based on how many encounters you survived, right? So there was a cool little stamper on your sheet. It was a really nice way to introduce DCC to people because it was great for kids. It was great for newbies. All you had to do was show up and play. It was mechanically extremely simple because there was no class stuff. It was all zeros. And
Hypercube of Might was the one right before Death by Nexus.
Yep. There was,
and then there was also the Shambling Undead.
Right, and you can play almost any funnel that way. I mean, I think
were they all they, group? Were those like all group ones, or was it one on one?
They were one on.
It wasn't necessarily teams. It was all everyone for themselves because you'd sit down. And you'd get a stamp for succeeding in one of the encounters. but someone else may have died, so they don't get that stamp. Someone else fills their seat.
But there were like four or five in the room at the time, right? Or something.
Yes, okay. There'd be like, I believe there were six players sitting at the table, and each person gets one zero-level character. And as soon as your zero-level character dies, then you stand up from the table and get back into the line, and the next person takes your seat with their zero-level character.
Yep.
And at the end of each
encounter, you get a little stamp that says, I survived that encounter.
Right.
I remember manning the line at GaryCon, and it went out the door of the lodge. It was awesome.
Yeah.
Cool. And they were moving, fun. Too.
Oh, yeah.
People were dying left and right.
The Death by Nexus game actually has had three teams, three players in each alignment. So it was nine characters at a time. But it was not really a team game. You were still kind of in it to win it for yourself, but you were on alignment teams, which was kind of funky. But
so your team consisted of three people out of nine.
Correct.
Yeah.
And it was in an infinite time loop, so I think there were just six encounters, but it looped, so you actually did it over and over again.
Julian.
Yes.
Swarm.
Oh, it's swarm time, is it? Well, James, welcome to your first swarm.
Wow, awesome.
Right on target, 50 minutes in.
Yep.
It's exact.
So I guess that means we should probably take over the emceeing of this episode for a little bit.
So the zero-level tournaments also expanded to include, while not, you know, official Goodman Games stuff, David Beatty then came out with the Carnival of the Damned, and that saw quite a bit of tournament action. And then there was Harley Stroh started the Enter the Dagon tournament, and that was the Spell Duels.
Yeah, and then it moves on to the current format, which is the... I know that Goodman Games used to do third edition tournaments where you would have your teams who would compete against one another, move on to each... there would be a set number of teams in the beginning. Many of those teams would get eliminated. A set number move on to round two. Those people compete against one another, and then two teams move on to the final round, and then those two teams compete to see who's the winning team. And I know that during the third edition era, those Goodman Games tournaments were very successful, got a lot of attention, and the current iteration of the Dungeon Crawl Classics tournament is designed to kind of emulate that. Now, what's interesting about the current iteration of the Dungeon Crawl Classics tournament versus the third edition era is that third edition, as James was mentioning, is something that very much has it's very rigid, and there are very clear rules about what is and isn't permitted. And that is not true with Dungeon Crawl Classics.
Thank God.
Well, you do have some things that are still standardized.
Yeah.
Like if you try to invoke a patron, you don't roll on the table, you get a set result. Your deity disapproval ends up being in a strict fashion.
In the tournament, so that's what I was getting at, which is that the tournament, because DCC is so swingy and so based on Judge Fiat, you know, something that might fly at my table might not fly at James's table at all, and vice versa. Also, even just something silly like a luck check. You might be doing a DC luck check. You might be doing a Roll Under luck check. If you wanna do cast Divine Aid, I know I'm very liberal with Divine Aid, and I let people get away with a lot when they use Divine Aid, because I think that's kind of what Divine Aid is there for. But I know that some judges are much more. What's what I'm looking for? Stingy. That's what I'm looking for.
Yeah.
They're much stingier with their divine aid. So because of that,
had to find a middle ground.
They had to find a middle ground. But what's interesting, though, is, you know, in my experience of having run this for a few years now, some of it works very well, and some of it works less well, in my opinion. So, for example, one of the things that they do to kind of eliminate some swinginess is there is average damage that's done to with every attack. That's fine. I'm cool with that. Also, one thing I really like is the critical hits and the
The fumble chart?
The disapprovals and the fumbles, those are all pre-rolled. So every table is going to experience the same disapprovals, critical hits, and fumbles in the same order. Yep. And that's great fun because you still get the insane results that you get from Dungeon Crawl Classics, but one table is not going to be subject to the whim of a bad die roll. They're all going to be subject to the exact same things. Yep. Personally, the things that I think work less well is the Mighty Deed. Now, in Dungeon Crawl Classics, the Mighty Deed is really a very fun moment to embrace your creativity. But that's also where you really get into judge fiat and DM fiat. Because what one judge will allow with a 3 on your Mighty Deed might be very different than what another judge would allow. So therefore, with the tournament so far, it's really set up so that really your Mighty Deed can only do one of three things. It can lower someone's AC, it can lower their speed, or it can lower their action die. Now, I don't know if we're going to be instituting this moving forward, but one of the things that I suggested to Harley and Mark this year was that we use the Mighty Deeds tables in the back of the DCC core book, because those because they're laid out, they're something that everybody would have to follow. There's no interpretation involved. We know exactly what the tables say. It still gives you an opportunity to kind of be somewhat creative with it. And also, those tables are cool and nobody uses them. I don't use them. Have you guys ever used the Mighty Deeds tables?
Nope.
Exactly. So this is a great opportunity to use those as well.
Yeah, but we will, in this somewhat near future, have a guest on who's done some Mighty Deeds third-party stuff.
Mm.
And anyway, enough said.
Enough said.
So with what Jeff has laid out, James, how do your tournaments differ?
Yeah, mine's super different. I think, you know what? it's a super intimate experience because just you and me, and that's it. So about 15, 20 minutes per person, one at a time. I think it was a fascinating kind of, it puts the player on the spot. They're the only ones who can really move the story forward. They have nobody else to kind of lean on to get through the encounters, right? They have to use their head. It's very puzzle based. You can get into combat, but it's not going to go pretty as a zero level, you know, guy.
Especially one-on-one.
So for the most part, it's all generally a puzzle, and it's really interesting just to see an individual have to kind of deal with a series of puzzles by themselves. So I think it's a cool format.
I'm intrigued by this one-on-one thing. So somebody buys a ticket to your game, which is a 4-hour slot, right?
Yep.
Or does it count as a 2-hour slot?
I put it down to 1-hour slots at Gen Con because I wanted it to be like just $2 to come in. And
so for that $2, they sat down and they got 15, 20 minutes?
Yep. And either I killed them in the first 5 minutes or they managed to get through to all three encounters. And
Do they get 4 funnel characters or just the 1?
They just get 1. That's it.
Wow.
And it's already set up to play it at home to make a character for your existing campaign. So you could like run through it 3 or 4 times and it'll take you about an hour.
Fascinating.
And at the end of it, one of those are going to get through because you're going to have learned the lessons, right, through of the puzzles, right? And there's kind of a mechanic to allow the it's kind of a little takeoff of the Hothrag Keep, where he gave you a book and you kind of that solo dungeon where you could kind of see what had happened before, what had transpired before. I kind of riffed off that a little bit and did something similar in a regular campaign version of the funnel.
So James, can you? I don't know. Two questions. First of all, it sounds like you're saying that somebody can enter the tournament multiple times. So if you bought 3 tickets, you could have 3 goes at it with 3 different zero level guys.
I didn't necessarily allow that, or I wouldn't necessarily count your points. Subsequent times I probably wouldn't.
Okay.
But
Because it's points per character.
Yeah, you have one attempt.
So it's one round per player.
Yeah.
Okay, got it.
Wow.
I think the hardest part has always been like figuring out points, like how to score it, like because it can get swingy one way or the other.
It's amusing to me, just the funny part of it being, it's sort of in a weird way a throwback to the old zero level tournament, because in the old zero level tournaments you'd pay a generic ticket, $2, to come in and get your zero level, and you'd probably last about 20 minutes. You might last one round. I mean, some people died immediately on the spot, right? And there was combat. But you might last 15 to 20 minutes, maybe two encounters. So, in fact, it's kind of a similar type of format, I guess you might say, from a player's perspective.
Yeah, and I think that for something like that, it would really play well at, like, GaryCon, where there's no additional charge for a seat at a table. And then you can make your event open for like 60 tickets or something. Mm. And that way people can get multiples and run through the line again or something.
Mm, yeah.
Because then you could score it per PC versus per player.
Right. Mm. I think the thing I kind of hit on at Gen Con was it's Appendix N adventuring. It's very much protagonist versus situation. Right? Like a lot of literature is there's not a team. Right? It's like they have one character who has to deal with whatever they're up against in the book. And
so it's like Cormac, the early years.
Yeah. Or, you know, Elric or Kugel. Yeah. Or, you know, it's just this, you're by yourself. You don't have resources. You don't have a team. And you have to get through this.
Now, one thing I'm curious, you're saying that a lot of these rooms are puzzle rooms. My experience running the official Dungeon Crawl Classics tournament is there are a lot of puzzles. And oftentimes people fall into one of two camps. Either they get the puzzle and therefore they think the puzzle is way too easy and they tell you how that puzzle's way too easy, or they don't get it and they think the puzzle's way too hard and they tell you how this puzzle is just impossible and nobody would be able to solve this.
That was
definitely my experience at Gen Con and Origins. Is everybody either thought it was impossible or way too easy based on whether or not they figured it out or not?
But you also have the groups that one or two people might know the answer, and then everybody else argues with them over it.
Right. There's some ambiguity in all these puzzles, and there's not necessarily always a right way to get through. In fact, there is a right way to get through it, but there are multiple ways to kind of get through that puzzle in this particular case, because I didn't want to railroad a particular puzzle, right? I wanted multiple avenues to kind of to get out, varying levels of success. And what's really the big deal is that you get points for your activity based on how well you kind of figured out that puzzle.
Hmm. Think of, you know, since I had just run Sailors in July and we were just talking about it, think of the Leviathan encounter, which is in a way a puzzle, right? You can't beat it with combat per se, right. Or if you did, it'd be extremely difficult. And probably TPK, but there's multiple ways to get around it. Some are probably easier and some are harder, but there are. I think that's a good design when you have multiple avenues, right? Because one gets, I think, very frustrating, like Jeff is saying. It either seems like an I win button or
what the hell was Terry thinking? Nobody's going to get through this room.
Kind of thing. Yes. All right. That's just a crazy, fun, interesting idea, James. I'm really fascinated by it, and I'm glad we could have you on to talk about it. So you are planning to kickstart the adventure here then?
Yeah, coming up soon.
What is it going to, give us an idea of what you're thinking for that. So this is going to be just the adventure book and, you know, tips on how to run it and so forth?
Yeah, it'll be the adventure book. It'll be probably put a lot of the tournament resources that I developed along the way in there. And then there's kind of a big stretch goal to rewrite the whole thing as a true solo adventure so that there would be no need for a GM, but you could still go through the whole thing.
Oh, that would be cool as well.
And then we'll do it as like a split adventure, like Traveler style.
Hmm.
Another way you could actually use that is, you know, you have the stereotypical, sure, I will help you if you can best me in this drinking game, or if you can best me in this dice game, or if you can come over here and solve this puzzle by yourself.
Oh, yeah. And that'd be interesting.
Take one of those.
Oh, yeah. Make it a modular.
Pull the parts out and use them.
Sure. Yeah. Oh, why not? Now, I know the tournament thing goes back to, you know, AD&D, right? Like Tomb of Horrors and I think Hidden Shrine of Tomoekan and some of these old adventures were done as tournament adventures. I should have researched the format better, but I believe there were points awarded in each encounter, and I don't remember that they did rounds as much as they just scored you for points, and at the end I think the point winners won, if I recall correctly. And some TSR historian is welcome to correct me. Why the F would we mess around with tournaments? I mean, okay, I'm just kidding.
Try that again, Joy.
Why the F? Okay, why the fuck would we mess around with tournaments? Is that what you meant? Or so?
No.
So, what
no.
I mean is, like when I started with D&D a billion years ago, right around the time that the wheel became prevalent, you know, it was like, why? Like the whole point of it was to have a game that you didn't win, right? Like I was like 12 and nerdy and bad at all sports and whatever. Like the whole point was a game that was more like poetry than baseball, right? Like where things just happened and it was a total imaginary landscape. I think people know what I mean without, you know, going into the deep, you know, discussions about not winning RPGs. So, you know, it seems that it's like a turning that idea on its, you know, complete 180. Like, we took the one thing that doesn't have to have a winner and we made it have a winner. Like, I don't know. What's the appeal?
Well, I would say that that's not unusual to RPGs. I mean, for Christ's sakes, there are yoga tournaments. You know, yeah. And yoga is supposed to be a physical manifestation of your spiritual journey, and then here are people having yoga competitions. So certainly, it's true. Look it up. Yoga competitions are a thing.
I'm good, thanks.
But I think what makes a tournament fun is, in my experience, especially with these team tournaments, the teams that generally do the best and go the furthest are often teams of people who already knew each other and came into the tournament, signed up for the tournament with their friends who they already game with. And I think what's kind of what's fun about it is it's an opportunity for you and your game group to like show off how well you guys work together as a team. So it's your opportunity to just kind of like show like how smart you are with these dungeons and how clever you can deal with these obstacles. Because really, it's the people who tend to make it further are usually the ones who work really well together and have really clever solutions. And suddenly, James is outside. How did that happen?
And this is where we pause.
I've done a venue change.
Wow, plot twist.
I can't figure this puzzle out, James. I'm out.
Yes. Well, it's it, yep. This is just another puzzle for the tournament. Yeah, I'm in my car now. I got to go actually to my daughter's choir recital. So I squeezed this in beforehand, but now
there we go.
I'm locked out of the house. Oh, we're renting a house up here, so locked out of the house, and now I'm just still sponging off the Wi-Fi.
Now I feel like I should get a green screen backdrop, and then just occasionally turn my camera off, and then give myself like a new background.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that would work great for me, except that I had some difficulties earlier, so I don't exist in your little screen anymore.
Well, we are past the hour mark, and you've got a recital to get to, Julian. Should we start wrapping this up?
I think so. So. All right. Well, thanks for being with us today. I hope you enjoyed our Gen Con wrap-up / tournament episode. Thanks to Judge James for being with us. And any parting shots, guys, before we call in an episode? Judge Jeff?
No, I think I have monologued enough for this episode.
Me too, Judge Jen.
Lankmar! Okay, I'm
Lankmar,
done.
Lankmar, ahoy, in an episode coming to you soon. Judge James?
I'll go with my standard phrase, go for it or go to hell.
All right, and this is Judge Julian signing off. We're saying game on, and remember, you can't spend luck when you're dead.
Amen.
And for all the legalese at the bottom, don't forget to email us at theband@spellburn.com, leave iTunes reviews, and send us some bumpers for our little segments, because we like the variety.
You've been listening to Spellburn, copyright 2017. The theme song has been graciously provided by Glitter Wizard. Learn more at glitterwizard.bandcamp.com.